Hello, beautiful souls. You are listening to the Curious Monkey Podcast, where you're invited to join me, a curious nugget, as I go on a journey to dive deep and learn about the world of yoga, as well as everything in and around it. Poses, teacher training, and super cool topics like energy healing and crystal bowls. You'll hear it all. I'm your host, Veronica Tai. Welcome to the conversation. Hello, and thank you so much for tuning into today's episode. Today, we're talking with Tanis Fishman. Tanis can be described as a modern-day mystic and explorer of consciousness. Our conversation will most definitely traverse into the spiritual side of yoga today, as Tanis's teachings go straight to the soul. One of the most significant teachings that she offers is a practice called Yoga Nidra, a deep meditation practice that activates relaxation of our minds, bodies, and emotions. We'll dive deeper into this, but first, let's welcome Tanis to the show. Hi, Tanis. Welcome.
Hi, Veronica. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Thank you so much for making time for us today. I am so thrilled to talk to you. But before I go any further, is there anything else you'd like to add to your bio?
No, it sounds good.
Okay, perfect. So normally, the first question that I ask is, how did your yoga journey unfold for you and what did that look like? But I almost want to preface it. I feel like we need to preface it with another question because the wisdom that you have is so profound. Your view on humanity and what it means to be living on this earth is so poetic. So my first question for you is, how did you get here? How did you get to this place where you're talking about the different levels of consciousness and the multidimensional facets of being a human?
Okay. I had a few very significant experiences growing up that really shaped the way I see this moment or reality. From as early as I can remember, maybe even age 4 or 5, I distinctly remember asking questions, asking my parents, like, is there more to what we see and feel and hear? Is there more to this? Is mm-hmm. there more to what we're experiencing? I need to know. And my parents didn't know how to answer my questions. And I kept asking those questions, and I didn't really find mm-hmm. anyone to answer them for me. And I remember very, very young, wanting to know if this was all there was to...
Those are deeply philosophical questions for a four-year-old.
Yeah, they were. My goodness, I even remember... I don't remember a lot from childhood. I almost blocked out a lot of childhood, but I do remember my parents one time having a dinner party, and I was mm-hmm. listening and observing their friends and the conversations that were taking place, and I was so underfulfilled with the conversations and the materialism of the conversations that were being had, even at such a young age. I don't know. I was so thirsty for a deeper sense of why we're here and who are we. And so those questions really shaped the course of my life. I kept asking those questions, and then I found myself being attracted to different places and different people, and that was really my map. Those questions were my map.
And wow.
I was brought or guided to answering those questions.
Yeah.
That was from very young age, just this thirst, this inner thirst to understand more than what I was being told or shown.
Yeah, I love what you said about your questions being your map.
Yeah.
Because at such a young age, at age 4, that's your most natural self. That's mm-hmm. your most innate self. There's not as many blockages as, well, being an adult can provide us, right? So I wonder, at age 4, what did you figure anything? Were these just questions, or did you figure that there was something more in some shape or form?
I don't know. Well, most kids were having a good time, you know, playing in the playground even through adolescence. Well, just even going to parties and doing what most people would consider fun. I I was so thirsty to understand a deeper sense of why we're here all the time. So that was really, yeah, that was wow. the theme. And yeah. so even if I didn't know if there was more or if those questions had a validity to them, I was still asking them. And there were definitely times where I would have an inner dialogue, like, what's wrong with me? Why aren't I enjoying this like everyone mm-hmm. else? Why aren't mm-hmm. I satisfied with going to the bar, you know?
Yeah, or, yeah.
just why aren't I satisfied with these experiences? Yeah, I see now how it was my most natural self.
Yeah.
Yeah, really desiring to uncover more more of these experiences.
And where did you start finding these answers? Or did you get all your questions answered?
No, they're still being answered. I'm still being guided. So I had a very profound experience when I was 19. I was in a car accident. Mm-hmm. I ski raced for Canada, and we were in quite a tragic car accident. And in that moment, I had an out-of-body experience, and it was the first time where I really shifted states of consciousness drastically, where I had no previous experience of what just happened.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was really a very significant turning point where I knew that what I was seeking to understand does exist, that there are...
It was proof
that we're multidimensional beings. And so I had a sneak preview into what I was to study for the, you know, up until this point. And so that was almost necessary for me in order to just have that direct experience, that direct knowledge that there's different states of consciousness that we have access to, and that way beyond what our five senses could ever give us. Then I had a very significant experience when I was around the age of 22, and I was in India at a meditation retreat. And I, during a break of our meditation, I was just walking down the street, and I remember a moment before the experience happened, I was just looking around, and there's always cows everywhere in India, but there was a cow right beside me, and there was tons of trees, and I was just walking, and all of a sudden, I it's hard for me to articulate exactly it, but I exploded. I exploded out of this form, and the construct of reality that I had previously known just got shattered, and I was in a completely new state of experience. I had no reference point for what happened, and it happened spontaneously. I say spontaneously because it happened in that moment. However, it could be that every moment up to that point, you know, was leading to what happened.
Yeah.
But if somebody said, well, how did you walk yourself up to that point? I have no idea. It was an accumulation of everything. Or it was nothing.
Yeah.
at the same time. So,
yeah.
But in that experience, I was consciousness, just pure attentive consciousness. And it's the most benevolent state. It's the most loving state beyond what would be an emotional experience, beyond a happiness that we would experience or I would experience with my emotions, that I can be happy, but I also know sadness. This was beyond an experience of the emotional system. I was in such a love frequency. And perhaps it was tapping into our divinity. I'm not totally sure.
I was going to ask that. Was it samadhi? Yeah. That state of enlightenment?
So
many questions.
Yeah.
What you're saying right now actually sounds very much like near-death experiences that people have. I'm going to have to look at who it was, but there's a TED Talk on this one neurologist who ended up having a stroke. And in that moment, when she couldn't speak, when she couldn't communicate like she normally did, she explains it kind of the same way, an explosion of consciousness. She was everything.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what it felt like? You were everything.
I did not feel local. I felt non-local. And what I mean by that is that my sense of self, I knew I existed. So there was that knowingness of existence, but my personality construct, the tennis that I had been so familiar with my whole life, my thoughts, my emotions, my feelings that were just uniquely me, all that was transcended. So, and this lasted for about 4 days, and then it started to diminish.
But four days?
4 days, I just had no reference point of my personality or my small sense of self. And so perhaps I expanded fully into my higher consciousness, but it didn't feel that there was a unique or individual sense of self, even though I could walk and I could talk, but in those 4 days, I wasn't hungry. I didn't really eat. Mm-hmm. I had no desire to eat, no desire to sleep. All I wanted to do was serve. I just wanted to serve, to be of service. There was no thought forms to needing to receive anything back.
Yeah.
Nothing to be recognized for. I didn't even need to tell anyone that this was happening because I had no desire to be recognized for what was happening. It was just a really pure state of being very in a state of bliss, like so beautiful. Beyond joyful, actually. And but what was really significant is I just wanted to serve people. I just wanted to serve.
In what way?
I wanted to just to give love, to express whatever love looked like.
Yeah.
Whatever that was. And it could look like different things in different moments, but it was just to serve loving consciousness to people and to animals and to all life forms.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was very significant. If there was an attribute I can remember, it was just to be a conduit. Like I was not to be a conduit. I was just, I believe, just a conduit of the loving energy, the benevolent energy that is always there. What makes it so drastic from now is our filter system. So being in our individualized form, we're filtering our experience very specifically based on our past.
Yeah.
But in that moment, I had no past. It exploded. So there was nothing to filter it through. So it was just our innocence, our essence.
Yeah, you just were.
Just were. Just
yeah,
is.
Just were. Yeah. Just, beautiful.
And so that was like probably what the yogis would describe as a yogic state where the mind is so, there is actually almost no mind, so that the experience is exactly as it is and the consciousness is just flowing through, you know, this apparatus from a clean, clear state. It's not being skewed by our samskaras, which is all of our past impressions up to this point, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Did it leave as abruptly as it came? Or was there a closing?
It slowly started to fade. And so for 4 days, I was just in that state. I was in a state of being. There was no past. There was no future. I was just completely in a state of being. And then it started to very slowly fade and fade and fade and fade until probably in a few months or maybe 6 months or up to a year, then it's like my form really started to crystallize again. My mind came back to the familiar mind. But during that 6 months to a year, I was very present, even though I wasn't necessarily just the benevolent consciousness. I had more of my tendencies, but I was very present. I actually remember moments when I wasn't present, and it was maybe a handful in that year where my mind wandered. And so that was, yeah, just an interesting experience because my mind didn't wander for about a year.
A whole year?
Yeah.
Did you still have desires? Did you still have preferences?
Not a lot. Not a lot of, not a lot of preferences, not a lot of opinions, not many judgments. I was just very present.
Yeah.
And usually if I did have a preference or if I did have a judgment, I would walk myself back to presence.
Yeah.
And then I wouldn't have that judgment or preference again. I remember for that whole year, I was never bored. Bored is a construct of the mind as well. When you're bored, you're in time, linear time.
Yeah.
When you're present, there isn't, you're in timelessness. So mm-hmm. you can never be bored when you're in timelessness.
No, right? Because you just are.
You just are. You're just you there. Just and the moment you're bored, you're going into the mental construct.
Yeah.
And you're either going into the future or the past. And so you've just put yourself in this three-dimensional reality that is feeding the data from our senses.
Yeah. So I you could see that clearly at that time. That
very clearly.
I could only assume that you were also at peace.
Very peaceful.
Very peaceful.
Very peaceful. Felt very okay. Like no strong fears. No fears.
No fears for a year? Fears
for a year. No insecurities.
What?
No, I know it sounds like
a sweet dream compared deal.
To today, but yeah, it was very, very peaceful. And I felt very, I was always in a state of balance and centeredness.
Wow.
Yeah.
What do you make of that experience?
I think I was gifted, almost like my consciousness said, here, you have been desiring to know that if that state exists, here, experience it. It does exist. And then after that, I was almost sent back to the beginning. And now I'm slowly, almost like through the trenches of human conditioning, I'm slowly peeling away the layers to bring myself back into that state.
Wow. But
I was gifted that experience to know that it exists. But it, for me to live full time in a state of samadhi, obviously that's not what's happening. But now I'm so immersed in the human condition just through family life. But I perhaps can help more people now because the majority of humanity is in a state of stress. We're stressed. We're overwhelmed. We have a lot going on. We're very invested in our personality, in our dreams, our aspirations, our futures. And so I feel more, I can relate to more humans in this state that I'm in now than to be in a state of samadhi because it's so drastic from the human condition of the wheel of samsara that we're in all the time.
Of course.
This perpetual wheel of suffering.
Yeah.
It is so drastic, yet at the same moment, it's a split second away from right now. It's a split second away. It's with the field of consciousness that we're all in.
That's so mind-blowing.
It's a second away.
It's right there.
But it's radical. It's incredibly radical. So I think I was just allowed to taste that state, to know that it's there.
Almost like, you know, you're on the right track because you've had this idea 2 decades, 20-some years, or since you were a little girl.
Yeah.
And so these 2 experiences must have really reinforced that.
Yeah.
And like just my own philosophy, philosophizing, that's not really a real word, but there is that contemplation. I certainly didn't question as young, but I think by the time I was a teenager, I just knew there was more.
Mm-hmm.
I knew there was energy scientifically, or all matter is energy. This is all there is. Energy comes out, energy comes in.
Mm-hmm.
And actually through science, I said, you know, we're all energy. That makes sense. And then from there, I started developing more ideas. Is there a higher being, a god, a Buddha, whoever, right? Is there? And I came up with, well, there's something.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't until I got into my yoga teacher training that I realized, oh, there's a place for this something. Mm-hmm. It's called spirituality. Well, that's great. And what I've made of it is that this life is a gift and it's a lesson. And we're here to experience the range of emotions. So what you said about samadhi and being in this sense of enlightenment all the time, it makes sense to not to be able to be in that all the time. Otherwise, there'd be no point of being mm-hmm. here. This is our school. We're here to learn, to understand ourselves, to understand all the feelings, yeah. hurt, anger, compassion, love, everything. And that's just so amazing, the experience you had. Mm-hmm. And I really think that is our job. Our job is to continuously work feverishly mm-hmm. to work toward this enlightenment by peeling back the layers. But there are plenty of layers to peel back, mm-hmm. plenty of lessons to learn, which actually leads me right into yoga nidra. Mm-hmm. Now, before we get into the depths of the practice, how did yoga nidra unfold for you?
So actually, during my last year in university, mm-hmm. there was a swami from India that came to the university and gave a lecture on consciousness. Yep.
Can I just ask, what is a swami?
So there's different traditions and lineages, but
okay.
my understanding is a swami that has taken a vow or made a commitment, in a sense, to walk the path sincerely of yoga. And there's some swamis that have maybe taken a vow of celibacy, but there's many swamis that I've met that are even householders and they have families. Mm-hmm. It's being initiated into a lineage or tradition of yoga where you're committed to the teachings, to the practice.
Great.
Yeah,
thank you. Yeah. That's really helpful, yeah. especially in all these yoga books I pick up.
But, yeah.
Yeah, thank
but
you.
There's many different types of swamis also. It just really depends on what tradition or what lineage or what guru disciple lineage they're coming from. So
Yeah. Thank you. So your path with yoga nidra.
Yeah, so I met a swami that came from India and he came to give a lecture at the University of Calgary. I was studying kinesiology. I studied kinesiology because I was fascinated with our human body, mm-hmm. but I was very underfulfilled with a lot of the curriculum because I wanted to know consciousness. I wanted to study consciousness. I wanted to study who are we?
Back to those questions.
Back to the questions.
Back to those right? questions, yeah.
And the professors couldn't answer me.
Right.
So I went to this lecture that the Swami was giving, and immediately I felt such a strong resonance with his teachings. And he only spoke about consciousness. And so I thought, okay, I need to know where he comes from. I need to know where he studied. So after the lecture, I went up to him and I asked him where he came from. And he told me he came from the Bihar School of Yoga. Mm-hmm. And I asked him if international students could study there, or could foreigners go and study there? And he said, yes. He said, it's an ashram. It's a very traditional ashram, but they have studies for overseas students. And he said, but the ashram lifestyle it's very disciplined. You have to really want to be there.
Yeah.
And it's not an easy lifestyle. It's not what we have here in the West. And I knew immediately I needed to go. There was no questions asked. I had to go. And then when I got home that day, I started to inquire into how to get to the Bihar School of Yoga. After I finished university, I ended up going to the Bihar School and taking a yogic lifestyles training course. As part of the curriculum, we had yoga nidra taught to us once or twice a day. And mm-hmm. I had never heard of the practice before. And I remember the very first practice we did. It was very profound for me. I had no expectations. I had no idea what the practice was. So I fully surrendered to it. And I had an experience that was somewhat similar, very watered down version of being pure consciousness.
Oh, in that state.
In that state. Yeah. But I had the experience of being in a more expanded or almost, I don't want to use the word separated because I was more unionized in that moment than ever, but separated from what I was so identified with, which is my thoughts, my personality, my body, my feeling state, my whole mind construct. But I was separated from it so that I could see it more clearly. And I could I could investigate into what I was so identified with in the waking state. And so it was a beautiful experience for me. And I knew with that very first practice, I needed to dive deeper into this practice because it was a container where I knew the questions I was asking, I could investigate them more clearly in this practice.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was how the Yoga Nidra practice came into my consciousness, was at the Bihar School of Yoga.
Yeah. And you've taken it very, very far, all the way back here in Canada, and you've introduced it to Calgary. Mm-hmm. There's just so much that we can gain from this practice. So let's start talking about Yoga Nidra. How would you describe it?
I would say that it's a conscious, and I would highlight the word conscious. It's a conscious relaxation of our body. And through that, through relaxing the body, then we have access to more of our subconscious mind. Mm-hmm. When the body relaxes, the doorway to deeper aspects of the self become available. Usually, when we relax or we go to sleep, our consciousness checks out, or a part of our awareness
That's right.
Aware of our waking state, it checks out as we go to sleep.
That's right.
And so we can go to sleep, but we don't know what happens really during sleep. But there is a part of the self that is always awake. So we can go to sleep at night and wake up in the morning and report that I had a good sleep.
Yes.
How do we know that we had a good sleep if we were totally unconscious all night? But there's a part of our consciousness that is always active. It's never going to sleep. So when we're going into Yoga Nidra, we are tapping into the part of ourself that is always and only aware and awake.
That's the hypnagogic state.
Hypnagogic state.
Hypnagogic. Yeah. In between the state of wakefulness where our consciousness is taking over and the dream state, somewhere sandwiched in between.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that would correlate with an alpha brain state.
Yes. And then there are brain states.
Yeah.
And then, and then there are sankalpas and then there are koshas.
Yeah.
But
we'll get
to what we can today.
But I would say on the most basic level, which I say basic, but it's very profound. It's a relaxation technique. Mm-hmm. So a part of the practice is, if we take, for instance, rotation of consciousness, where you're bringing your attention to different body parts, it's incredibly relaxing because what we're doing in that moment is bringing our attention to the different parts of the body. And we go very slowly through the hands and the face and the feet. And what that's doing is bringing our attention to the white matter of the cortex of the brain, which we have built into our brain is the landscape of the body. So it's like we're getting a massage. We're massaging the brain, which is incredibly relaxing for the body.
Wow.
So a lot of people in this part of the practice, they can't hold their wakefulness because it is so relaxing.
Yeah.
So I would say, you know, if what percentage of people check out during rotation of consciousness, probably 80%.
I'm one of them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Because it is so relaxing.
Yeah.
You're massaging the brain. And during that time, the brain waves, which in our normal waking state are in a beta range, when we're very stressed, they ride higher to a higher beta brain state.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when we get very engaged with our thoughts and we believe our thoughts to be true. Yeah. We believe our personality to be the only reality. We believe the details in our life to be just our only focus. We focus on everything that's wrong. So that's like, that's a whole other conversation.
Right.
About being
yeah.
stressed. But when we're moving into a more relaxed state, the brainwaves start to slow down and they get into a lower beta brain state. But then when they get into an alpha brain state,
yeah.
it's like, this is a very sacred brain state.
Mm-hmm.
And we naturally cycle through all the brain states all throughout the day and throughout the night. But the alpha brain state is possibly the less used consciously. It's the transitional brain state from when we go to bed at night, we're lying down and usually we're still engaged in our mind. And then there comes a point where all of a sudden we're sleeping. We then went, when there was a moment where we let go of our thinking process,
right.
of our thoughts, and we slip into this really beautiful space. It's almost like the twilight zone where you're just present. You're just there.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go into REM sleep or theta brain state where you're now identified as your dreamer and you're dreaming.
Mm-hmm.
So in the waking state, we're identified with our personality. We're identified with what our senses are bringing in. And then we're identified in dream state. But the brain state in between, which is the alpha brain state,
yeah.
it's where there's no time, there's no space,
mm-hmm.
and there's no you. There's no little you.
Yeah.
There's no environment. And so you're just there. But we're not consciously aware of that state. We go from one to the other. And what we're doing in Yoga Nidra has so many benefits, but also so many uses. One of the use, so not only is it a conscious relaxation,
yeah,
because you're relaxing the body, you're relaxing the mind.
Yeah, that's like
the emotional
first layer.
Exactly.
Right. Because it is truly an art, the art of relaxation.
Exactly.
In our modern day world, relaxation to many means turning on the TV,
yeah.
turning off the brain, or taking a nap, going straight to those delta brain waves.
Yes.
Yeah.
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 Or, yeah, using some type of distraction to then get you almost numbed out enough.
It is numbing. Yeah.
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 So that's the thing is Yoga Nidra, it's like you're lying there and you're there with just you, and you're allowing for everything that is arising to be noticed
yeah.
and to be allowed. And that's a very high state. It's a state of freedom because you're not trying to get away from anything. You're not trying to go anywhere. You're not trying to get away from yourself, but you're opening up your field of experience for everything to be exactly as it is. And through that attention, then the stresses and the tensions that are normally energized.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we distract, or they're still there, but we take our attention away from them, but they're still unconsciously or subconsciously there acting on the psyche, on the body. So in Yoga Nidra, we're bringing our awareness to these ropes of tension to unwind, and we're unwinding.
Yeah.
All the charged energy that
yeah.
is there, so that we can be left in a state of true rest, of real rest. Because when you go to sleep at night, and unless you're going immediately to deep, deep sleep where there's no dreams, you're still processing so much information, and it's still stressful. You're still
exactly.
active, even though you're not conscious of it. It's still acting itself out.
Mm-hmm.
So then in Yoga Nidra, the being consciously there, it allows you to notice what tensions are present,
yeah.
to notice what thought forms are actually very destructive. and to get space from them, to see them more clearly. Also, as you're moving through the different layers, you go into, you access more of your intuitive mind, which could also be called like higher perspective. So you have an opportunity to see things more clearly because you have more space to see them. You're not identified with them. You're stepping back.
Yeah. That gets me so excited. These brain states, this alpha brain state.
Oh, yeah. So the alpha.
Yeah. The alpha brain. That's what we're really, well, yeah. I think that's where we've yeah. been. Yeah. That's the coveted brain state. Mm-hmm. That's what I've decided in my mind.
Is. Yeah.
And that is also the meditative brain state. But yoga nidra, what's so exciting to me is that we're consciously opening up into this brain state. Mm-hmm. And then the next layer is exactly what you just said, tapping into our intuitive selves. So there's room for shift. There's room for transformation and to get rid of any limiting beliefs, those thoughts that are working into our psyche as we're sleeping. We get to get rid of those. Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. And that leads to sankalpa. So I think we should make a pit stop here for a brief description of sankalpas and how they work.
Yeah, okay. So sankalpa, if it can be in an English word, we can look at it as a personal resolution. Mm-hmm. What it also is doing is it's a conscious direction of your will. It's a conscious direction of your vision, of your desires, of your dreams, of your of the qualities you want to enhance in yourself. Most of our beliefs that we have downloaded in our subconscious have not been consciously chosen.
Exactly.
With Sankalpa, what we're doing is we are consciously going in to the subconscious, which is where it's our operating system.
Yeah.
Which is where our belief system are stored or housed. Mm-hmm. And we're making it a conscious choice. And this is huge.
Yeah.
Because we have to understand that underneath the surface, everything on top of the surface that is getting played out has its roots underneath the surface in the subconscious.
Yeah.
So what is fueling and motivating our behavior? What is why we have the preferences we have, why we have the opinions we have, the judgments, the prejudice, the insecurities, the likes, the dislikes, why we have all of that on the surface is because of the belief systems that are supporting it. Now, we don't know what our belief systems are, but we can have a somewhat of a sense because we can look at our life and we can see what's getting played out, why we act the way we act, why we respond the way we respond.
Right.
Why we have the thoughts we have. They're all getting fueled, influenced by our belief systems. So Sankalpa, it's a very transformative piece in the practice because we are going into that space. Now the alpha brain state is supporting us access into the subconscious. When we're in an alpha brain state, the analytical mind, which is kind of like the security guard between our conscious mind and our subconscious mind, it stands on alert. So say we're in our waking state and we want to work with an affirmation, why it may not be that effective or as effective as working in a hypnagogic state is because we'll say, oh, I am peaceful. And if there's a belief system going on, that is, I'm impatient or I'm not safe to feel peaceful, especially in stressful situations. If there's something going on underneath the surface, or take worthiness is such a huge one for
probably
humanity.
I can see that.
So if you're walking around all day, desiring to know your worth, to feel that you're deserving of a certain situation, of to feel like you're deserving of happiness.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a belief system going on underneath the surface that you're not deserving to be happy,
yeah,
or it's you're worthless.
Yeah. See, that gets so tricky because it's like one of those under the skin pimples.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's yeah. there. You can't get at it.
Yeah.
That belief, mm-hmm. I don't deserve happiness, or yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
So you can say to yourself as much as you want, you know, I am deserving this, or desire. You can try and manifest certain experiences as much as you want. Your manifestation may even happen, but for not very long. Because if you're not at the vibrational frequency to sustain that manifestation, then it doesn't matter. You could have everything you want in the outer world.
Yeah.
You could have the best relationship. You could have the best environment, the best job, the best school, the mm-hmm. whatever. You could have everything. But if your core belief system is one of unworthiness, then nothing around you will give you that sense of peace.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter.
That story yeah. so many times.
Totally. We have to, we'll keep trying to perfect the outer world. Even if there's almost everything in perfection, but there's a yeah. few things, we'll still try to seek that outer experience to change our inner experience. But what we're doing in Sankalpa is we are changing our inner experience first.
Right.
And then seeing the world from that lens.
Yeah.
So what we're doing is, in an alpha brain state, the analytical mind is quiet. And so we have access into the subconscious. And we are planting this seed, this code, this law.
Yeah.
And through very conscious attention, and the words all hold a energy to them.
Mm-hmm.
We're putting it in to the subconscious. We are putting in a program that we choose.
So what's an example? Let's say there is an individual who feels unworthy. Their limiting story is, I don't deserve happiness. Now, which Sankalpa would work for that?
Yeah. You want to pick a Sankalpa. First, there's a few parameters. You want to state it in using the present tense, because the subconscious mind, you have to speak to the subconscious
yeah.
in the language that it understands. The subconscious mind is only in the now. So you want to use the words, I am.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's reflecting of this moment right now. If you use the words, I will be, I want to be, at some point I will be, you know, it's like you're giving an instruction, a future based. So you may experience, the desire or the wanting in the future. So I am, state it as though it's now. That state it sense. In the positive. So you always want to use what you are desiring, not what you're wanting to overcome. So
yeah.
what the final outcome will be is what you want to put it in.
Yes.
So and it should resonate with you very strongly. It should make sense to you. So with unworthiness, a few different examples. You could use, the simplest one would be, I am worthy. You could be, I am worthy of happiness.
Mm.
I am worthy of being myself. I am valued for who I am.
Yeah.
I am deserving of the best life. I am deserving to fulfill my dreams.
They're all great so far. Yeah.
You also want to keep it concise and short enough. When you're in a hypnagogic brain state, mm-hmm. you're not going to want to recite a 5-minute paragraph. So yeah. you want it to be very concise and something that comes immediate to you, that you can remember in a very twilight state. You
exactly, know? Because we're relaxing yeah. so much that
yeah.
you can quickly fall out yeah. of consciousness.
Exactly.
So yeah, yeah. you want to so plant you, that right yeah, in there before.
You want it to be easy
yes.
To put it in. Also, if it's too concise, you may be limiting a bit of your experience. However, if it's too abstract and broad, some people may not be able to get on board with it as much.
Yeah.
So to say, I am worthy, you're really opening it up to the entire landscape of what worthiness looks like. In our waking state, if you have a belief system that you're unworthy, you may not know what worthiness looks like and all the different forms that it can come in. So by saying and opening up, I am worthy, you're opening it up to everything. But if you don't feel that that's good enough to work with,
yeah.
then work with something more concise. But if you limit it to what you think worthiness looks like, you're using your conditioned mind mm-hmm. and putting, you know, from a conditional standpoint and feeling unworthy, you're trying to project or see what worthiness looks like, and you don't know.
Yeah.
So it you want to almost keep the ceiling off it.
Yeah.
But make it concise enough that it can be tangible enough to grasp onto.
That actually makes so much sense there. I know it might sound abstract, but the one thing I always fall back to is how it feels. It has to resonate with you.
Mm-hmm.
You must feel it. So maybe I am worthy is too broad. I am worthy of happiness hits the mark.
Yeah.
But then I am worthy of being invited to family events.
Yeah.
Then you put a lid on it.
You do.
yeah. Then you yeah. put a lid on it.
But it might be what somebody needs to start with, even just yeah. to see that shift immediate, like to see that happen.
Yeah.
But then you'll have to, okay, now I'm worthy of a loving relationship. Mm-hmm. Now I'm worthy of an abundant lifestyle. Now I'm worthy of, and you have to, you know, you'll have to go through all of that. But if you keep it open, I am worthy.
Yeah.
Then you're opening up to any possibility and to the unlimited possibilities that we have access to. But yeah. again, if you're saying I am worthy and it feels just like just a mental construct you're saying to yourself, but you're not feeling it in your cells.
Exactly, yeah.
Then it's not going to take root as quickly. So you might need to make it very specific for it to work quickly.
Yeah, and that then, makes sense. You know,
one other thing I want to say as well, because a lot of people are working with healing.
People are healing themselves or people are helping others heal?
Healing themselves.
Okay.
So even if we're healing from an injury, at some point we're always trying to heal.
Something.
And so many people over the course of me teaching Yoga Nidra, many, many people are wanting to work with their Sankalpa to heal themselves. I once had a student who was working with healing for so many years. And so I asked her very specifically, well, what's your Sankalpa? And she said, my Sankalpa is I am healing. And I said to her, how would you feel once you're healed? How would you feel?
Yeah.
And she said, God, I don't know. I've never I've never put that out there or thought about that because I'm always healing. So what I suggest is, because if you put that program in, and remember our programs too is our infrastructure. It's the foundation that we're standing on in order to have that experience of our beliefs.
Exactly.
So if you put in the program, I'm healing, then you're going to experience healing.
Oh, Yeah.
But you're going to experience healing and healing and healing and healing.
Exactly.
All the different ways of healing. You may not experience being healed.
Yeah.
So keep going with it. Walk yourself through it. How would you feel once you're healed? Would you feel at peace? Would you feel joyful? Would you feel bliss? Would you feel free?
Yeah, your desired end state.
Exactly. So that's what you want to make your sankalpa.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you can make it anything you choose, but if you go to the end desired state, then you're opening it up to that experience.
Yeah, like the best case possible.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's really great. It makes so much sense. Thank you for that. I have one more question before we wrap our conversation up about yoga nidra. And I wonder if it's a bit of a difficult question, but how long or how many sessions would we do of this yoga nidra before we can begin to see these sankalpas manifest?
Good question. Yeah. Somebody can shift their belief system in a second.
Yeah.
And for other people, it could take years. It also depends on if you have a belief that it's not possible to change, or how strong your belief is in your invested personality. And so that might either be a belief, that might be another sankalpa that you're working with even before you're working with the programming. You might be needing to shift your belief around if it's possible to change your beliefs.
Yeah.
So that could be a factor. I've had a lot of people to tell me, oh, I'm too old to change, or I've been this way my whole life, this is just who I am. And so if that's a strong program running, that needs to get looked at before looking to work with any other sankalpa, because that's a very strong program. Well, this is just the way I am. I've been like this my whole life. I'm too old to change. I always react in this way. So that's something to look at. Another factor is if you're not in the hypnagogic state.
Yes.
Then it could just take a lot more time.
Like if you've fallen straight to sleep.
Yeah, if you fall right asleep and you're not putting in your sankalpa.
Exactly.
Or if you're putting your sankalpa in when you're still in a higher beta brain state, it's going to get rejected out. It's not going to be accepted. So the receptivity of the mind is at its peak when we're in the alpha brain state. So the work too is to be able to maintain awareness in quieter brain states.
Yeah.
When your body is so relaxed, and you stay awake, then that's usually access into the subconscious mind. And then sometimes if belief systems aren't ready to be changed, then that's another factor, because we have our belief systems. At some point, they really served us. At some point, they created a safety for us. If it wasn't safe to maybe be noticed, or be worthy. If we have a sense of worthiness, we also have a sense that we matter and that we're noticed and seen. For some people, being seen could be life threatening.
Yeah.
And so if it's not safe to change that belief system yet, then it won't get changed. I do believe that it's our higher consciousness that is overseeing it all. But we have to work with the universal laws as well to make these changes. So how long? I mean, it could take one yoga nidra session and something has transformed, or it could take years of yoga nidra sessions,
you
know? It's so individual. I get asked a lot, how do you know if your sankalpa has been realized?
That's a good one.
And I would say that when you react different when you act different, mm-hmm. when your thoughts start to change. And yeah. that's really interesting. The thoughts you've been thinking your entire life that are so familiar and they're you. And then all of a sudden, those thoughts don't come anymore.
Yeah.
Because you've changed the programming, which is fueling your thoughts.
Exactly.
Or when you're about to react to something and there's no charge anymore. You used to get angry at a certain situation and now there's no anger. And you're almost wondering, why is there no anger? It's because you've made that shift.
Yeah.
You're seeing it's things like, differently.
Yeah,
your perspective like is changing.
Quiet transformation almost. Totally. Yeah, so thank you for that. It mm-hmm. makes sense. That's kind of what I was expecting. Like, I mean, I held on to a glimmer of hope that there was some sort of prescription, you know, do it three times and you're good. But it makes sense because we're all on our own journeys. Mm-hmm. And what you said about the complexities of sankalpas, of maybe you're trying to change something, but then you have this bigger belief that you can't change. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. When you put it that way, we're peeling not so much like an onion. We're like a tangled mass of yarn.
Totally.
And we're just trying to like
it's pick an intricate
one piece.
Web of yeah.
Just yeah. I think I'm going to imagine. Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's okay because that's what we're here for.
Yeah.
And that's what tools like Yoga Nidra are for, so that we can begin to pick at that one thread and start to untangle mm-hmm. everything or as much as we can.
Yeah.
And find that place of samadhi, maybe one day enlightenment, right?
Yeah.
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 Well, that does conclude our conversation today. Thank you again so much for your time.
Oh, you're so welcome. Yeah.
Before I let you go though, last question of the day mm-hmm. of your whole entire journey thus far, what is the biggest lesson that you've learned?
Oh, the biggest lesson. I would say be surprised about yourself. That's what I've learned is to not sit in I know very often. To be open and surprised and curious about the self. What I've also really learned is that if I find myself judging another person, mm-hmm. what's happening more rapidly now than ever, even in this very unique time in history of our human consciousness where there's a mass awakening happening and where the light is really light and the dark is very dark.
Yeah.
If I catch myself judging another person or judging a situation or a circumstance or not having that authentic compassion, I'm going to get schooled in it. I'm going to get the teaching very strongly. So that's been a really strong lesson. If I'm judging, then there's something in myself that is misaligned, that is not, that hasn't been seen yet, that there's a program in me that is still out of date, and I am going to get my lesson in it.
That's such a beautiful way of putting it. Very self-compassionate. A program's out of date.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to get your lesson. You're just going to have to learn it. I love the way you've put that.
Yeah, stay curious about and surprised about ourselves because it is an intricate web
of
every past experience up to this point. And to know, to think that we know it all, to have such strong opinions and judgments and prejudice and preferences, it's so limiting. It mm-hmm. limits our experience, and we're living on like a tiny sliver of what is.
Beautiful. Thank you. If anybody has questions for you or wants to reach out for further information, where can they contact you?
I've taken a little bit of a leave of absence from the whole teaching world just with having a baby, but they can go onto my website. It's www.tennisfishman.com. I have a contact form there, and I'll definitely get back to everyone. Many people ask me about Yoga Nidra trainings, and I'm in the process of putting together some really exciting stuff in the future.
Awesome.
Looking at lots of different trainings and workshops and online 6-week courses. And yeah, so that's all in the works. I do believe I'll be ready to teach in the new year, probably in February. And when I do, I'll post that on my website. They can sign up for my newsletter by downloading the free meditation, and any future trainings and workshops and all that, I'll definitely send out a newsletter. You can connect with me on Facebook. I have my personal Facebook page, and then a Facebook page called Out of the Box with Tanis Fishman.
Oh.
And that's where I post all my trainings and anything I find interesting.
Okay, well, thank you again for your time today, Tanis. It was such a pleasure chatting with you.
Thank you. Yeah, it was a pleasure to meet you and to be connected with your whole audience.
Yes, thank you. And thank you to everybody who's tuned in today. As always, all relevant links and resources will be in the show notes on veronicatai.com. If you enjoyed this episode, please keep the good vibes going and share this with a friend who will also love it. Until we meet again on the next episode, continue exploring and feed your soul with whoever or whatever sparks you.